Okay, today's daf is Pechet. We're going to start at the Mishnah, and we will finish up the ninth perek today. Nice, clean daf. Starts at the Mishnah, ends at the perek. Okay. Klei halach mekadshin et halach, umidot yavesh mekadshot et hayavesh. There were all different types of utensils in the Mikdash. We were talking yesterday about clay kodesh, and how if you put something in a clay kodesh, even if it's disqualified, it sanctifies it. So now we're going to talk about liquid measuring utensils or liquid utensils. We're going to see that there's a distinction within liquid utensils. There's ones that we use for measuring, and then there were ones that we use for collecting the blood, for instance, right? That was more like a cup. And the other ones were more measurements. So liquid measuring cups or utensils, we'll see exactly which ones we mean right now, only sanctify liquids. And ones that were used for dry ingredients are only sanctify dry ingredients. And now we're going to see that it doesn't work the other way. Ein klei halach mekadeshet et hayavesh, v'lo yavesh mekadeshet halach. If you put dry ingredients into one of the liquid measuring cups, it won't sanctify it. And also the reverse, if you put liquid into the dry, doesn't sanctify it. Each one, this is maybe the concept that everything has its own very specific use in the Mikdash. So yes, a clay kodesh can sanctify something, but only if it's the right type of object.
In my kitchen.
Although we'll see, right, like in your kitchen. Clay hakodesh shenikvu. What if you have a clay kodesh that gets a hole in it? Im osim bahem me'ei melachtan shayu osin vehen shlemim. If you could do the same type of work that you would be able to do it, use while it was whole, and now you can do the exact same thing while it has a hole. Let's say, for example, gets a hole in the very top of the bowl, or it's chipped, something like that. Then you can use it. Mikadshin, sorry. Then they sanctify. In other words, then anything you put inside can actually sanctify it. Vimla ein mikadshin. But if not, if it can't be used for its original purpose, like it has a hole and things are dripping out, obviously it can't be used, then it doesn't work. Vikulan ein mikadshin ela bakodesh. All of this, you can have a clay sharet, but it can only work inside the mikdash. If you take it out of the azara, then it's not going to sanctify anything. It loses its ability to sanctify. Okay, which also combines this, you know, kedushat makom and kedushat of an object, right? That the object only has kedusha while it's in the location.
And if you take it out of the kodesh, can you bring it back?
I believe so. It's not like, it doesn't have that same status. Okay, Amar Shmuel. Lo shanu ela midot. When it says that the clay halach can only mikadesh the lach and not the yavesh, Shmuel comes and says that's only midot. That's only measuring utensils. Okay, where they would measure how much oil or how much wine or things like that. Avam mizrakot, but the mizrakot that they use for collecting blood, mikadshin, would actually be able to sanctify dry ingredients. How do we know this? Shneamar. Shnehem le'im solet. Okay, let's read the whole beginning part. This is from Parshat Naso, where we have all the korbanot of the Nisim. Perek Zayin Pesuk Gimel. V'korbanot karat kesef echad, shloshim u'me'a mishkala, mizrak echad kesef, 70 shekel b'shekel ha'kodesh. Okay, both the kara and the mizrak. Okay, the mizrak is the cups that they would use for the blood. Shnehem le'im solet b'lula b'shem in the mincha. They both would hold, the kara and the mizrak would hold the mixture for the mincha. Now, the mixture for the mincha has solet in it, so we're going to call this a dry ingredient. Now, we're going to talk about, well, it's mixed with oil. It's a batter, right? What exactly would you call that? Would you call that a dry ingredient or a liquid ingredient? Because it's not exactly dry, but right now we're going to say, shnehem leim solet, what do you see? That they put them in the mizrak, which means the mizrak can be used for dry ingredients. Amar le rabacha midifti le ravina. Mincha lechahi. What are you talking about? A mincha is mixed with oil. That would be called a liquid. Amar le. There are going to be two answers now. Lo nitzracha ela liyavesh sheba. There's an assumption that they might not have been the most adept at mixing batters, and that when you have this solet mixed up with shemen, they might not have mixed it well enough, and you're going to have some dry ingredients in there. And therefore, it's saying that it's even going to sanctify whatever's dry that's in the cup. Ibai dam, a second option. Mincha legabe dam ki yavesh dami. And this is where I said in the beginning, it's a question where you put it. In any case, it's more dry than blood. Okay, it's thicker, would be a better way of saying it. I don't know if you would say more dry, but it's thicker, less liquidy, maybe would be the better way to say it. And therefore, since it's less liquidy and still it's sanctified in the Kli Sharet, we're going to assume that anything less liquidy than dam, which is going to go from the mincha all the way to anything dry, and therefore anything dry that goes in the misrach will actually be sanctified, and it won't be if you put it into one of those liquid measuring cups where they would measure the wine or the oil.
We all went to that workshop where we actually mixed the solet with oil, and it was definitely more dry. I mean, it was a very dry, moist effect. I mean, there's no question that you wouldn't have considered it liquid.
Okay.
It wasn't even a runny batter. It was heavy. Flour just mixed it with enough oil that it sort of was sticky.
Oh, okay.
It was nothing.
Excellent. Yeah. There you have it. Okay. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel continues and says, Klei sharet ein mekachin ela shlenim, ein mekachin ela mileim, ein mekachin ela mitochan. Okay, we're now going to see three things. The next source, we're going to see some people say it's a different version that says a different. We're going to see altogether there's four things. In other words, one changes. So here he says now, a klei sharet only does things that are full and only sanctifies things that are, or no, that are whole, sorry, that are whole. It only sanctifies things that are full and it only sanctifies things mitochan. Mitochan, we assume, means inside
from inside the clay, right?
Because there's a term mitochan and there's bifnim, which sound like the same thing, but bifnim is going to be inside the mikdash and mitochan is going to be whatever's inside the bowl, rather than, we're going to see in a minute, what would not be included. Do you remember when we talked about mixing the solet? That you end up with this godesh, this stuff that overflows, right? It ends up outside the bowl. So it will only sanctify what's mitochan, what's inside. Okay? Amrela, some people say, no, the version is like this. Eim kachin ela shlemim, things that are whole. Umileim, and full, like we said. Umi bifnim. And bifnim, we're going to see, is different from mitochan. Mai benayu, ika benayu, berutze midot. What's going to be the difference? This godesh, if there's stuff overflowing. So if you say it's mitochan, only what's inside them, then it's not going to be anything that's sticking out of the kli. If you say mibifnim, we mean mibifnim from within the azara, which is relating to something totally different, not mibifnim the kli. They sound the same, right? Tochan, mibifnim, but what they're saying is mibifnim means from inside the mikdash, inside the azara, and not from inside the kli. So if you said the second version, then the godesh would be included also, because it's the kli is full, even if it's over full, it's going to include whatever's in the kli. But if you say only mitochan, then it's only what's inside the kli. Bimatnita Tana, there's a brayta now that has the version of all four of them, okay? Because we had three, and then we have one interchanged. Was it mitochan or mibifnim? And now we're going to say there's another version that says Eim mekachin ela shlemim umaleim umitochan ubifnim, all four. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, lo shanu ela she'ein da'ato lehosif. Now we're going to talk about this male. It has to be full. What does it mean male? It has to be the full shiur of whatever was supposed to go in. And if you don't put in the full shi'ur, then it's not going to be sanctified. So he says, well, that's only true, she'ein da'ato lehosif. Aval da'ato lehosif, rishon rishon kodesh. Let's say you decide, I'm not putting in the full shi'ur, I'm only putting in this amount. Then it's not going to sanctify it. But if you decide to put in the whole amount, but you put it in bit by bit, then as soon as you, since your intent is to fill up the kli and do the whole shiur, therefore every little bit that you add, rishon rishon kodesh, as soon as you put it in, it already becomes sanctified. He doesn't really address, I didn't really see, I mean, I'm sure people address this, I just didn't look well enough. Maybe it says it here, maybe Rashi does, but that, what if you don't actually end up filling it up? Because your intent is to fill it up, and then for some reason you don't. So I guess the assumption is that whatever you put in actually did become sanctified. Again, you could see where intent matters. That since you intended to put the whole shiur in, so therefore, rishon rishon kodesh, every time you put something in, it's kodesh. Even if you don't actually end up filling it up, it could be that whatever you put in is already sanctified. That's what it sounds like it would be from him. Tanya Namihachi, here's another brayta to support. Mele'in, ein mele'in ela shlemim. Okay, mele'im means, right, shlemim is whole. Amar Rabbi Yossi, ematai, Sorry, right? How would you read that? Mele'in
Eliela. More like complete, but the content is complete rather than the
bowl. Oh, right. So there, actually, the Mele'in is coming from that pasuk. Shnehem Mele'im Solet. Right, I forgot to mention that. That's where we get that it has to be Mele, because it says Shnehem Mele'im Solet. They're both full of Solet. So now when the pasuk says Mele'in, they say, what does Mele'in mean? E Mele'in Ela Shlemim. It means you have the full Shi'ur. Okay, right? Mele'in doesn't mean it's full. It means it's whole, that you have the whole Shi'ur inside. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Ematai, Bizman She'en Da'ato Lohosif, Aval Da'ato Lohosif, Rishon Rishon Kodesh. So again, we have the exact same thing that we just saw. This was just a braita to support what Rabbi Yochanan said, because remember, Rabbi Yochanan's an Amora. The braita, if it supports what the Amora says, that's always a good thing, right? We're going to say, oh, that strengthens his opinion. The Rabbi Yossi, the Tana, already said that that's exactly the case. Okay, now we're back to the fact that if you take the Kle Halach, the kli that's meant for measuring the shemen or the yayin, and you put in it yavesh, it's not mikadesh. So it doesn't sanctify it. So now we're going to learn, okay, this goes back to everything we've been discussing about disqualified offerings, that we have all these disqualified offerings. What do we say here? Amarav v'item arav asi, ein mikadshin li karev, avam mikadshin li pasel. What did we say in the previous Mishnah? That once something goes into a clay sharet, if it was disqualified, right, it becomes sanctified. Meaning that it sanctifies anything that comes near it, which then we had imalu, lo yerdu, right? Since it's already sanctified, even though it's disqualified, if you already offered it, you don't have to take it off. But that's only if it was sanctified in a clay sharet. So now we're going to learn that when we said the kli lach doesn't sanctify something that's dry ingredients, that only means it's not sanctified if you want to bring something lechatchila on the mizbeach. Okay, so let's say you have let's just call the mincha dry, like we did before. You put the mincha into one of these measuring cups for the oil or the wine, which is not going to work for it. So you can't now sacrifice this. You can't bring the mincha onto the mizbeach. But if you did b'di'eved, it would be okay, because b'di'eved, it's disqualified items are sanctified, right? And it's enough to lifsolotam, to say, this is now disqualified because, right, like let's say,
but it's not,
okay, I'll tell you what it means disqualified. It means that if you, what did we learn? That if something goes, if something never went into the klei sharet, you have this mincha, you didn't put it in any kli, and you walk out of the mikdash, it's not psul from yotze. In order to become psul for yotze, it has to have gone into a klei sharet. So now, what if you put that dry ingredient into the liquid measuring cup and then took it out of the mikdash? So that is enough to disqualify it.
It is enough
to disqualify it. But it's not enough to say, if it wasn't a disqualify, let's say you didn't disqualify it, you take a mincha, you put it inside, and you're ready now to put it on the mizbeach, that's no good.
Except that okay? It's not a mincha if it's only the solet. The solet has to be below the shemen.
Right. No, I'm saying the solat we already said is considered dry even if it's mixed with the oil. Right? We're
so
talking about
a mincha. Okay.
Right. It's a mincha. It's considered dry. So right. So basically what we're saying is it's enough to say it went into a klei sharet that it hasn't, it's very weird because we're saying it has a minimal amount of kedusha but not a maximal amount of kedusha, right? It's not enough kedusha to say that we can now go sacrifice this. But it's enough kedusha to say that now we can disqualify it. In other words, if it goes out of the mikdash, it already had gone into a klei sharet, and therefore it's not allowed out of the mikdash. If it doesn't yet go into a klei sharet, then it's not sanctified at all. If you take it out, there's nothing wrong. It's not kodesh yet. So it's enough to put in the wrong measuring cup to call it for the purposes of disqualifying it, but not for the purposes of sacrificing it. Some people, okay, now this was a statement of Rav or Ravasi, we're not sure who said it, that ein mekadshin li karev, avam mekadshin li pasel, and we're assuming that it's referring to our Mishnah. Now we're going to say that some people say, ika dematne la'aha. We've had this many times. Ika dematne la'aha means some people say that this statement of, whether it was Rav or Ravasi, we don't know who, but right, we have confusion about a lot of things. We don't know who said it, and we don't know on what Mishnah he was talking about. Was he talking about our Mishnah? And was he referring to say, in our Mishnah, putting something in a klei sharet will sanctify it for the senses, for the purposes of disqualifying it, but not for the purposes of allowing it to be sacrificed? Or was it said on a different statement, okay, which actually is a Tosefta, okay? Was it said on this Tosefta? Ein mivi'im minachot u'nisachim u'minchat behema u'bikurim. Okay, this is, I'm just going to explain the first part, even though we haven't said anything yet. We're talking now about a mincha, okay? You want to bring ingredients for your mincha, or your nisachim, right? Or your wine libations, or you could have oil libations, or minchat behema, or the mincha that goes along with a sacrifice, right? There's a mincha where you just decide, I'm going to bring a mincha. Then there's minachot that go together with, or sometimes also you can bring a mincha in place of a korban, right? The olav yored, right? Where if instead of an animal, if you can't afford it, and you can't afford a bird, so you just bring a mincha. Then there's minachot that go alongside korbanot. We saw that the other day, that there's minachot that come b'fnei atzman, and there's ones that come on account of the korban. Ubi kurim, okay, your first fruits. Any of the following items can't be brought from the following items, okay? Meaning, we'll see in a second. So, ein mevi'im minachot nesachim mincha behema ubi kurim min hamiduma. What's miduma? Miduma is fruits that are truma fruits mixed in with non-truma fruits. Okay, nothing's asur. It's just the truma is only allowed for the kohen to eat. So, miduma, if you have a mixture of truma and regular food, so what do? The kohen can eat it, but nobody else can eat it. What the Tosefta here is telling you is that you can't bring, let's say you have bikurim that got mixed up with truma produce, you cannot bring those as bikurim. Okay? You can't bring them because there can't be, and likewise, nisachim, mincha behema, minachot, they can't be brought from items that have truma produce mixed in with regular produce because all korbanot have to be able potentially to be eaten by everybody. And these are only allowed to be eaten by the kohen. So because of that limitation, we're not allowed to bring it. And that's why they say ve'ein sarach lomar, and obviously not foods that nobody can eat. For example, orla and kilei akerem, which are asur b'hana'ah. Those things not even the kohen can eat. This is the fruits for the first 3 years, which are forbidden, right? The fruits that grow on the tree for the first 3 years, which nobody's allowed to eat. And kilei akerem, right? Those are kilayim that grew, kerem next to either a field, right? A vineyard mixed up with crops of something else. So you can't bring it from kilayim, because obviously, you know, if the meduma, which at least the kohen can eat, is forbidden, obviously these, which everybody's forbidden to eat. Ve'im hevi lo kidesh. Okay, and if he brought them, then they're not sanctified, okay? So Amar Rav, here comes now, if you remember what we were up to, we said that Rav made a statement here, which was, here it says, Lo Kidesh, so now they're going to say, Amar Rav, Itamar Ravasi, Lo Kidesh Li Karev, Aval Kidesh Li Pasel. In other words, if you brought them, they can be disqualified, but they can't be sacrificed. In other words, they do have some sort of semblance of hekdesh because you brought them for hekdesh purposes, even though you're not allowed to use them. So what does it mean, lipasel? Okay, so Rashi says, delo nafke lechol, it should be lechol, it should be lechulin, that's what I figured. Delo nafke lechulin, v'yisrefu. In other words, these have to be burned because you brought them to the mikdash and now they can no longer be, right? Normally you have something like this so you can just, if you made a mistake, so right, they're not kodesh. But in this case, if you brought them, they're already sanctified for the sense that they're now pasul. And once they're pasul, they have to be burned because you basically messed up. You brought them to the mikdash incorrectly. But they're low kidesh to the extent that you can't bring them. You can't sacrifice them. Okay, so there's a debate about whether Rav made a statement on that Tosefta or he made a statement on our Mishnah, which obviously has important ramifications. Because if you didn't make the statement on our Mishnah, then when our Mishnah says lo kidesh, it would mean that if you put something liquid in a dry measuring or a dry kli, a kli that's used for dry ingredients, it doesn't become kodesh to the extent that if you brought it out of the mikdash, it wouldn't be disqualified. So it has important ramifications whether he said a statement here or there. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Klei kodesh shenikvu. Okay, now to the end of the sugya, we're basically going to be talking about items that are holy that then have problems with them. Okay, all sorts of problems we're going to see, and we're going to move from here to the big day kahuna. Okay, for this we have some pictures. And then from there we're going to get off on a tangent all about Bidei Kuna and other things that have a certain purpose that we're going to get off on a totally different tangent, which is a nice way to end the parak in a very different way than the rest of the Masechet, I would say, has been going. Klei Kodesh Shenikvu, Ein Mitichinotan. Okay, if you have Klei Kodesh, let's say they're metal, and they have a hole in them, so what could you do? You could keep them on the fire and fix them. So according to this, you're not allowed to do that. Ve'ein Mitichin L'Tochan Avar, another way to fix them, how would you fix them? You put lead in the hole, right? Fill the hole with lead. Can't do that either. Nifgimu, if they got dented, you know, some sort of pagam in it, Ein Mitachnim Otam, you also can't fix them. So, okay, all the reasons for this, it's going to say it inside in a little while, but I'll already tell you, it's because of this concept, Ein Aniyut Bimkom Ashihut, which means you cannot have, you can't have anything that looks like poverty in a place of wealth. What's the place of wealth? The Beit HaMikdash. Okay, it's very interesting because we always think wealth is maybe, you know, has this connotation of maybe not so good, but what they're saying is the Beit HaMikdash is the most glorious place. It's a place of, you know, both holiness, but also glory and beauty. And if you have, you know, imagine, right, you take your, you know, I'll give you an example where we're going to go to the Bidei Kuna. Okay, let's say you have a big tear in your clothes and you put a little patch in it, right? It would be kind of embarrassing if the Bidei Kuna had a big patch in the middle of it, right? It looks like a poor person. What?
I learned that before, that you couldn't do that.
Right, exactly. So that's what we're saying here, and that's what we're going to get back to the Bidei Kuna, the same idea, that basically you don't want this clay kodesh to be noticeable that it was fixed. Because basically what they're saying is anytime you fix any of these utensils, it's going to be noticeable, and it's not respectful. It's not appropriate. And then it leads to a ton of waste, which we're going to see, which is amazing, that we're going to have a ton of waste in the Mikdash. Now, they try to come up with solutions to this waste, which we'll see. Okay?
No, it's just such a conflicting message.
Right. That's what, exactly. Yeah, it's a very conflicting message.
Because in the one way, it's wonderful, because it makes the place more exceptional. Because you have to figure most people will fix their things and live in relative poverty. Most people.
Right.
So it has to make it more spectacular.
Right.
On the other hand, it gives a terrible message.
Right. So that's the issue, that it's a bit tricky here, because what are we saying? It's a place of wealth. You know, even the fact that the Kohen Gadol, if you remember, had to be wealthy. You remember that? And that was because he had to bring this Mincha Chavitin every single day, and they had to make sure he could afford it. And there's other things about his clothes, and there's a lot of outward. And the real reason for this is that even though it goes against our, you know, it rings a little problematic to us, but you have to remember that the average person, you know, whether they walk around in rags or not, when they look to a king, right, they expect it to look a certain way. And if the king doesn't look glorious, even if they, right, this is how people live vicariously through others sometimes, right, they expect the king, they expect leaders to be on a higher standard than they are, they expect, and whether it's appropriate or not that they think that way, we have to have a system that incorporates the fact that if people look askance at, oh, look what's going on. Ooh, the Mikdash, they're using these kelim that are broken, then it's going to affect the way people respect the makom. And because of that, because of the bad nature of people, the people are judgmental, and they look, and they say, and they comment, and it makes them feel, even though most of them are probably walking around looking like that, and they would for sure fix their kelim like that, but we can't have them, when it comes to the Mikdash, it has such an important place that we can't have people saying, oh, the Mikdash. It's not appropriate.
It's so brought about communism, this kind of attitude. Like, it's a really mixed thing, because they could also begin to resent all the taxes that are going towards
Yeah, fair. Right. So that's also true. Right. Because they're spending a lot of money on what we're going to see. I mean, I think there's a much crazier one that's coming up. Okay. So, but even these, right? These were made of gold. They were made of, right? They had a lot of other things. You know, they had expensive materials that went into making them, so to say that you can't fix it. But what they would do with the kelim is they would melt them down entirely. At least the kelim, there's not really waste, because they would melt it down entirely and then reform it. And you couldn't just fix it, you'd have to, so maybe it cost them a little more because they'd have to have a welder do it, you know, a craftsman do it. But I imagine they had someone in charge of that in the Mikdash. Okay, nifgimu, so emetaknim otam. Sakin shenifgam, if you have a knife that's messed up, which in theory you can sharpen it, em mashchizinit pigimata. You can't fix it by sharpening it. Now this is not if it's just blunt and you want to sharpen it, that's fine. If it's a small thing that won't be noticeable. But here we're talking about where it actually has a real nick in it and you want to sharpen out the nick where it will be noticeable. Nishmita, this one's harder to understand, but I think it's just because we don't really understand their kelim. If the handle came out of the knife, e machzirinota. I assume they were made in such a way that they were attached, and then once they detached, if you put it back together, it would somehow be noticeable. It's hard to imagine exactly, because you would imagine just putting two pieces together should work, but it seems that it doesn't.
It's also not as strong.
It's not as strong. It doesn't work as well, you're saying.
Right.
Could be. Could be. Okay, Abba Shaul Omer, Sakin Matrefet Haitaba Mikdash, Vinimnu Alea Koinim Viganzua. Okay, this, here he talks about a real case that happened. He says there was this Sakin that kept causing trefot. So what's the assumption? Here it doesn't really mean trefot, it means nivelot, because a trefot, remember, it's a misuse of the term, just like we misuse the term tref, called non-kosher meat tref, or really trefot, remember, means an animal that's sick, that was then shechted, it was going to die anyway, and you can't eat that. But here what we're saying is, they had the sakin that kept resharpening. It wasn't really pagum, but it was just that they kept needing resharpening, but it wasn't working because every time, or every few times after they would use it, it would keep causing the shechita not to go right because it had these nicks in it, and it messed up the animals, and eventually they all kind of voted on it. It's interesting, they voted on it, and then they put in the gniza. So this is what they did with the knives when they were done with it. Do you remember there was a place called the Beit HaSakinim? They would put all the knives, it was around the Hechal. Do you remember around the Hechal there's this area called the Beit HaSakinim, and they would put the knives, like in the Ulam, I think, on the side of the Ulam. So in that area, that's where they would put all the old sakinim that were no longer good for use. Okay, they would be gonesa tam. That's really wasted. Tanu Rabbanan, Big Day Kehuna. So now we're going to get to the Big Day Kehuna. Okay, and from here we're going to get off on a tangent. Ein osim otam maase machat ela maase oreg. They're not done by sewing, but by embroidering. What's the difference?
Weaving.
Thank you, weaving. When you weave it, you weave the entire garment. When you sew different parts together. And here it has to be a whole woven thing. It almost sounds like the menorah, that it was mikshachat, right? You can't take different pieces and weld them together. So here also, it had to be one woven garment. Shneemar, maase orek. Because the pasuk says, maase orek. Okay, it calls it maase orek. This is on the mi'il, and then from there we learn to everything else. Nitga'alu, if they get dirty, here's the interesting one, okay? Ein mechapsin, lo beneter, velo be, I forget your pronoun, ahal, I think is how you pronounce it. What do you have in the nikud there? Ahal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, ahal. Okay. These were different cleaning materials. We've come across them before. If they get dirty, the clothes, you cannot wash them. Because by washing them, what's going to happen? They're going to look worn. Okay, and they have to look shiny and new. Now, this sounds all interesting. Think about what the Kohen is doing all the time. He's getting blood and oil and solet. Imagine making the mincha, right? You ever make challah dough? It gets all over the place, right? So here, what we're going to see is that as soon as his clothes got dirty, he'd have to change them. Okay, which is crazy because you would imagine his clothes, like I said, like I've told you before, when you go to the Zevach HaShomroni and you see them doing the sacrifices, everybody's wearing white and everybody's clothes have blood on it, has blood on it. Okay, I actually read someone who said, well, then we're going to see in a minute. So from here it says, you can't wash it with cleaning materials. So what do they assume? Ha b'mayim mechapsim. So it sounds like you could wash it with water, you just can't use cleaning materials because... Meaning, if it's only a little dirty and it can wash out with water, then you can actually wash it. So Amar Baye, and it sounds like what? You can't wash it with cleaning materials, you can wash it with water? So Amar Baye, Hachi Kamar. Baye explains, yeah, in fact, that's true. Hug'u b'mayim mechapsin otam. B'neter no, sorry. Hug'u? Hug'u b'mayim mechapsin otam. B'neter right. Hug'u b'mayim mechapsin otam b'neter ba'ahal. If it gets dirty... To the extent that you only need to wash it with water, you could then even use cleaning materials. But hug'u l'neter, if they got dirty enough that you would need neter, ve'ahal, then af v'mayim e'mechapsin. Then even then, you can't wash it with water. So what they basically mean to say is, it depends how dirty it is and how much washing it needs. It doesn't really matter cleaning materials or water, it just matters how dirty the item is. Now, I read somewhere where they were saying about how the Kohen gets, commentary that said the Kohen gets dirty with blood and shemen and all that, and he basically said, well, that's obviously stuff that you can wash out with water, which I thought was really odd, because really oil is the hardest thing to get out generally, and blood also. Like, if you think of any two items that stain your clothes, besides tomatoes also and maybe peppers and watermelon, but otherwise it's blood and oil are really very hard to get out. So it's interesting to think about. Now, what would they do? It doesn't tell you here, but they would do, they would take the clothes of the Kohanim. Do you remember what they would do with them? They'd make wicks out of them. They would shred they would take out the threads, basically take them apart, and use the threads for making wicks so that they wouldn't waste them, but, you know.
It's a lot of wicks.
It's a lot of wicks, but think about it. The menorah needed wicks. I mean, they needed wicks, you know, a lot, and think about them for their lights. They needed, if they were working in the mikdash all night, you need a lot of candles. So yeah, it's very interesting. And now we're going to get to the real machmir opinion. Yesh amrim, ein mechapsino tam kol ikar, she'ein aniyut b'mkom ashirut. They can never, ever be washed. Okay? And in fact, this is how, I believe it's the Rambam I saw. Yeah, the Rambam paskins like this. That you can't wash B'day Kehuna at all, which is really crazy to think. It means they must have been changing their clothes at least once a day, if not more, right? Think of how many clothes we're going to waste. This whole sugya I find so interesting in terms of, like what you were saying, Shari, this concept of waste in the Mikdash. Now, again, they tried to resolve it. Also, we saw the Kohanim Gedolim's clothes. Do you remember on Yom Kippurim, they had to put them aside. No one could ever use them again. There was that also. All different aspects of this. Another issue of Enan Yubim Komashiru, you can look it up and see. It comes up in a bunch of sugyas. The Rambam says you shouldn't bring an animal that's very slight as a korban, like a very thin animal, because again, Enan Yubim Komashiru, you have to bring a nice, robust animal. So it has all sorts of ramifications, and it really shows this aspect that they looked at the Mikdash as a place of Ashirut, and because of that, all sorts of things were just out of place.
On the other hand, they made allowances for poor people by allowing them to bring birds.
Yes, they did make allowances, right. This is the Mikdash itself. The Mikdash has to support, which is interesting, like you said, because it's the taxpayers' money that's going to support the Mikdash, but the Mikdash has to support this, you know, then when it's individuals coming, so individuals, we're going to give them options, but the Mikdash itself has to be a place of...
The difference is, though, that this was also a place, like, they got something back. It was a people's temple. Like, if they're paying taxes, a king can live in a beautiful palace.
That's true. This was working for them. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And look, it's a similar concept to the... to the Sanhedrin. When we talked about the Sanhedrin, there's certain standards the Sanhedrin has to keep in order to make sure that people appreciate the system and don't start knocking the system and saying, you know, like the whole thing, like you mentioned, you mean about small, short, small, you know, if they tell you right is left and left is right, you have to listen to them anyway. Again, there's all different opinions about how we view them. But the point is there's a system and you have to keep the respect of the system. If the people start to lose respect for the system, so just like it works in the Sanhedrin like that, it also works in the Mikdash. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Me'il kulo shel tchelet haya, shenemar vayas et me'il ha'efod. Okay, since we were talking about the me'il, because the me'il was where it said, ma'ase oreg, so now the pasuk says, vayas et me'il ha'efod, ma'ase oreg, kliel tchelet. The whole thing was made of tchelet. Here's a picture, I'm going to pass it around. Okay, so the me'il was of tchelet, because it says, vayas et me'il ha'efod, kliel tchelet. Shulav ketsa, what about the bottom of the me'il? There's a debate, by the way, about the me'il, whether it was, you can see the one in this picture looks to me anyway, like it had a front and a back and not really sides. It was like an apron that has a front and a back, but the Rambam and the Ramban view it that it was cut in the middle, right and left. That there was, like, no matter what, there's going to be two sides to this, either front and back or right and left. Okay, this picture shows the front and back option and not the right and left. What did the bottom of the me'il look like? Do you remember the pasuk says, Pamon Rimon, Pamon Rimon? So what is this Pamon Rimon? So now they're going to say, Mevi tchelet v'argaman v'tolat shani shezurim. They take threads of blue, of purple, and of scarlet red, all intertwined. Vose otan kimim rimonim shelo petru piem. They make them in the shape of a rimon, of a pomegranate that hasn't opened the top part. Ukemin, I think this is just another way of explaining it. This one's a little less understandable. Ukemin kona'ot shel knasot sheberashei tinokot. Some people say it's not knasot, it's klusa'ot or something. It's like the cones on the top of the helmets that kids wear. Kids wore these type of helmets, not for biking, but I don't know what kind of helmets they were wearing. It sounds like maybe even for playing
like a
with.
Hat with a pom-pom.
Right, exactly. So that's the way the Schoenstein explains it. It has like a little button on it, like a hat with a pom-pom. The Koran had a bit of a different explanation, but anyway, I think the Rimon image is a much better image for us to understand. Umevi shivim ushnaim zagim. They would bring 72 bells. Shabahem shivim ushnaim imbalin, right? In other words, the outer shell of the bell with the imbal is the clapper. Vitole bahen shloshim v'shisha b'tzadze v'shloshim v'shisha b'tzadze. And they would do third. They would now. There's a bit of a debate about the nusach here. Tole bahen sounds like they put inside the rimon the bell. But that's not what they do. Other people say it's not tole bahen, it's tole. It means, or even if it says tole bahen, it means in between them. If you look at the picture now, you could pass the picture around again because now you have to know what to look for in the picture. That they basically they did one pam, like the way it says in the pasuk, pamon rimon, pamon rimon, pamon rimon. Not that the pamon was inside the rimon the way maybe the pshat here sounds like, but no, it was next to. So shloshim v'shisha b'tzadze v'shloshim v'shisha b'tzadze. So to get to 72, right, you have 66 on one, 36 on one side and 36 on the other side. Oh, no. You have 36. You have 72 of each. Each, it's a lot. We're going to see another opinion that says there's less. Okay, right, they are tiny. So the debate is, right, again, what's tzadze and tzadze, the front and the back, or the right and the left, depending on which version you go by, how the mi'il was made.
They found one archaeologically.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what did it look like?
It was a very, very small bell, and they think that's what it must have been.
Uh-huh. They found a bell, not the coat.
Either a bell or a pomegranate. I forget which.
But not the coat.
It was a bell.
I think it was the bell.
It was the bell.
They found a very, very tiny one in your W.
Okay. So maybe based on that, you could see they're gold. Look at the picture. They're gold. I forgot to mention that. And now, so we're going to see this debate. Rabbi Doso, Meir Mishum, Rabbi Yehuda, Shloshim B'shisha Hayu. There were only 36. Shmonasre Mitzadze, Shmonasre Mitzadze. 18 on each side. Okay, so you could imagine, based on what they might have found, we could figure out which was the case. Amar Rabbi Inyani Bar Sason. This is interesting because Inyani, right, it doesn't sound like a real name, and it sounds like it has to do with Inyan, like a topic. Maybe sometimes people are called this because of their names, because of what they say. Like they're called something. Maybe this is why, I don't know. Kimachloket kan kach machloket b'raot negaim. The same way the Tanakama and Rabbi Dosa have a machloket here about whether it's 72 or 36. They have the exact same machloket by how many negaim are there. So maybe inyani means, right, it's they have the same machloket by different inyanim. Ditnan, there's a Mishnah that says, Marot Nigaim, Rabbi Dosa ben Hirkanis Omer, Lamed Vav, 36. Okay, just like he says here. Akav Yibay Mahalalel, who had matched Tanakama Bayas, Omer Shivim Vushnaim. Okay, so there you have it, that they have the exact same machlok and how many Nigaim are there. There's a whole debate about how could we possibly get to 72 different types of Nigaim, and they try to figure it out, and they include Nigay Batim and Nigay Gadim, and they're not only talking about Nigaim on the body. Anyway, the Amar Rabbi Inyani Bar Sason, Lama Nismecha, since we're talking about him already and connected to the Bidei Kuna, we're going to mention another thing. Why is Parshat Korbanot Nismecha LaParshat Bidei Kuna? So first of all, where are the Nismechim? The first seven Prakim of Vayikra are all about the Korbanot. The eighth Perek starts in with Bidei Kuna. This is what the Kohen should wear. So why is that right next to the Korbanot? Lomar Lecha Ma Korbanot Mechaprim Af Bidei Kuna Mechaprim. Just like the Korbanot provide atonement, the Bigdei Kehuna also provide atonement. We've seen that the Kohen Gadol can atone for the Ir Miklat, right? His job is for that. He atones on Yom Kippurim. Not only that, but the clothes of the Kohen can also be mechaper for the people. How so? Yeah.
And before that, we talked about that the Kohen couldn't step on his, that he couldn't
step on the bottom of, yeah.
So he wouldn't want to.
So he was stepping, so they're not talking about the cloth that he was stepping
on. No, the pants. That was the pants.
Okay.
How long the pants were. Okay, so now we're going to see what's mechaper on what, and then we're going to have a question from some other source, which seems to say something else is mechaper on two of these items, and then we're going to resolve them. Okay, here we go. So this is a totally different type thing, because now all of a sudden we're getting into atonement, and we say here, k'chonet mechaperet al shvichut dam. How so? Go back to Yosef. right? The story of Yosef, Shenemar, Yishchitu Shiyirizim, Veitbalu Ataktonet Badam. The classic case of Shvichut Amim, or at least they tried to kill Yosef, was using the Ketonet. So the Ketonet is Mechaper on Shvichut Am, even though there really wasn't Shvichut Am, but they made it appear as if there was. Michnasai Mechaperet Al Giloy Arayot, Shenemar, Vaselehem Michnase Bad, Lechasot Basar Erva. So there you see, it's to not only to cover their erva, but it's also mechaper on giloy arayot. Mitznefet, the hat that he wore, mechaperet al gasei ruach, on arrogance. Minai and Amar Rabbi Chanina, yavo davar shebegova v'yechaper al gova. Right, we'll take the highest thing that he's wearing, that will be mechaper on the sin with haughtiness. Avnet, the belt, mechaper, which they put around the, not, they didn't put it around their waist, they put it higher up. And the avnet, mechaper al hirhur halek. Okay, of sins of the heart, right? Things that you think about. Hechad ite choshen mechaper. I don't know why it says hechad ite. Is that the only nusach? Right. Ahecha.
Where it's placed.
Oh, sorry, I didn't read it right. That's why mechaper al yehor alev hechad ite. In other words, it's mechaper on the yehor alev, which is exactly where the avnet is placed by the heart. Choshen mechaper al hadinim, by mistakes made by in judgment. Shneemar basita choshen mishpat, because the pasuk describes the choshen as choshen mishpat. That's where we get, right, that's where the Torah decided to name the fourth chelek of his book choshen mishpat. Ephod mechaper al avodah kochavim, shneemar ein ephod utrafim. There's a pasuk in Hosea which basically it seems to what they're saying is when there's no ephod, then there will be trafim. But when there is a fod, then there won't be averot of trafim, because the efod will be mechaper. The pshat, that pasuk is a little different, but we'll leave it aside right now. Me'il mechaper al lashon hara. Okay, the me'il of the Kohen Gadol with the palmonim is mechaper al lashon hara. How so? Minai and Amar b'chanina, yavo davar shebekol v'yechaper al kol hara. Okay, we're going to take, it makes noise. When he would move, it would make noise. That will be mechaper al lashon hara, which is noises of bad kolot. Vitzitz, the tzitz that the Kohen will wear, the head plate. Mechaper al azut panim, brazenness. Vitzitz katuv, v'haya al metzach aharon, v'azut panim ktivu metzach isha zonah hilacha. Okay, so there you see, metzach is used as brazenness, and here it sits on the metzach of Aharon. Now, we're going to see that we show that all the begadim have a place in terms of what they're atoning for. Now they say, Ini, is this really true? V'hamar of Yeshua ben Levi, shnei dvarim lo matzinu lehem kapara b'korbanot. There's two things which no korban is mechaper for. U'matzinu lo kapara mimakom acher, but we found something else that atones for them. Ve'eluhin, shvichut amim v'lashon hara. Now this is strange because we just said that the parts of the, right, the ktonet on the shvichut amim and the pamunim on the lashon hara, the me'il. Shvichut amim, according to this, Brita, me egla arufa. In other words, we have a whole halacha of egla arufa, this mechaper, when somebody kills him, we're not sure who kills. So there you see, shvichut amim is mechaper through egla arufa. V'lashon hara miktoret. Where do we see that? Detani Rabbi Chanina, minayin liktoret shemechaperet on lashon hara, shenemar v'yitein etaktor v'chaper la'am. This was in Korach. What did Korach do? He did lashon hara Moshe. And here, we see the ktoret came to be mechaper. Now, what's interesting is, we're talking here about, when we're talking about Shvichut Amim, remember, Shvichut Amim, there is no kapara. The pasuk says, you can't pay your way out, you can't get atonement, you die. That's all there is to it. But what we mean is the community's responsibility when this happens, which is really interesting. They're saying that we have a need for kapara when someone else kills and when someone else speaks Lashon Hara. So they're going to say here, how could that be? V'tanig b'erav Yishmael, amak Torah mechaperet, al Lashon Hara, Alashon hara. So here again, another story says the Torah is mechaper alashon hara. Yavo davar b'chashai v'chaper al maaseh chashai. You do the Torah inside the hechal. It's more secretive. So something that comes inside is going to be mechaper on something that is more quiet, which is lashon hara. So now they're going to say kasha lashon hara, kasha shvichut amim, shvichut amim. And now they say lo kasha. There's two different types of shvichut amim, and there's two different types of lashon hara. Had yediya man katle, had lo yediya man katle. The differences are a little different. In Shvichut Amim, it's the act was the same, it's just we don't know who killed, and then we use Egla Rufa. And if we know who killed, then what kapara do we get? Then we have the kapara of the Ketonet. So now they say, What do you mean? Idiyadiya mankatle bar katalahu. If we know who killed, then we kill him, and that provides us with atonement. In other words, we're only responsible for death if the person doesn't get atonement for, you know, he doesn't get punished. But if he gets punished, then we're no longer responsible. So how could you say we need atonement for that? So what do they say? No. Bimezi below atrube. It's a case where we know someone did it, we know who did it, but we can't kill him because he didn't get warned. So in that case, what's going to happen? He is not going to get atonement from the ketonet. He'll get, according to Rashi and Erchin, he gets sarad for this. But the people will get atonement from the ketonet of the Kohen Gadol. V'lashon hara, lashon hara, nami lo kashya, habitzina, habifrahesya. The Kohen Gadol, remember it said, yavo davar b'kol, and it will knock out the kol hara. That's when lashon hara was done b'frahesya. We're now going to say there's a difference between someone who says bad things outwardly and someone who does it secretly. And secretly is going to be the ketoret, because the ketoret is davar b'chashai, yavo davar b'chashai, v'yachaperol davar b'chashai. Something secret. There's one major problem, I'll leave you with this before we finish the parak, that the whole lashon hara of Korach was the one that the ketoret came l'chaper, and it wasn't secretive at all. It was very public. So I saw a possible answer, but it's quite difficult. There's a problem with this answer, really. But the answer was that the people, all who went with Korach, they're the ones that the whole nation got punished. They had maybe more quiet lashon hara. But it's more problematic because really it's relating to the sin itself, which was Korach's sin of lashon hara. So it's a bit of a question here. Like it seems pretty for Hesia. Hadran alach mizbeach mekadesh.